Hello, everybody. This is Becky Bristow with Kayani. I hope everybody's doing well. We've had a lot of fun things going on this last week and a half. I know for everybody joining us on the call, you've heard some exciting announcements and things that have gone on. And for those that were with us in Orlando, you've got to experience those firsthand. And we've had a lot of production coming off of our Orlando events. For those that weren't with us, I just want to talk a little bit about some of the things that have happened and were announced, one of which is the improvement of the Kayani product. We have the Sunrise that the company actually improved and added some incredible ingredients to, and then the Sunset as well. And for those who didn't understand some of the changes, in the past, of course, we've had a great product. You know, Kayani products have always been really, really great. But now they are on, I call it a ridiculous level. We took the Sunrise product. We had some oil and water soluble ingredients that were in the Sunrise, and same thing with the Sunset. And what our doctors and medical advisory board found out was we could actually produce a higher absorption rate and increase some of the nutrient value as well by having the Sunrise in all water-soluble products and the Sunset being an oil or lipid-soluble. And so that's really the change that everyone is going to start seeing here. For those that were with us at Orlando, we were able to already purchase the new product and bring it home with us. For those that are just dying to get their hands on it, which I can't blame you, it's awesome. We are talking about in February in the U.S. market that those products will start shipping out. We also have a price increase that is literally just a few dollars.
Hi, Becky. Just keep talking. I'm just John Maxwell here. I'm on.
Oh, so glad to have you. The price increase, we're talking about a couple dollars per product. In the last 6.5 years, the company has never had a price increase, even though we've seen the market and the economy, everything has increased. I mean, even the price of bread, the price of milk, and Kayani has stayed true to their pricing. But now with adding another 13 ingredients to the Sunrise, adding the beta carotene to the Sunset, the company actually still absorbed quite a bit of that cost. But, you know, we're talking about a $3, $4 difference in these products to really see a huge difference in our body and our health and these wellness products. So make sure and stay online, you guys. Check the website on a daily basis. Look for all the updates and make sure and plan ahead to get to one of the events as soon as possible in your area to learn even more about it. So without any further hesitation, I have the privilege of inviting our special guest to be with us on the call today. And for most of you that have been joining us on these calls, you know exactly who I'm referring to, but I'd love to take this time to thank Mr. John Maxwell for all of his generosity, you know, and as we know, time is more valuable than anything, and the fact that he's willing to give that up and be with us is a huge testament to his character, his integrity, and his lifelong pursuit of improving other people's lives. So I'd love to turn the rest of the time over to my dear friend, John Maxwell.
Hey, Becky, thank you very much. Let me tell you, me giving time to you and to your people, Becky, is a tribute to you. And I have to, as anybody does, you do, I know all the time, Becky, I have to figure out where am I going to spend my time and who am I going to spend my time with and how am I going to spend my time when I am with them. And it's really, I do this because I admire so much you. I just so admire what you're doing. And every month when I get to be on with you and be with your people, I just count it a real honor, really a privilege. And I love looking and preparing and finding material that I can pass on to you and material I hope that will add value to you and help you be more successful as you really work this amazing business that you have. So, Becky, thank you for having me again, and I look forward. Hey, it won't be long time coming out to Los Angeles and be with you. Won't that be fun?
We are so excited.
I'm very excited about it. I was looking, going through my calendar today, just looking at my schedule, and And I looked out and I saw I was going to be with you here just very shortly now on a Saturday. And I just thought how fun it's going to be, not only to be with you, but for your entire company, but how much fun it's going to be to be with your people. I mean, I've almost spent a year now teaching them and not been able to meet most of them yet. And to be able to be there and hopefully say hi to them at least, it's going to be really a wonderful thing. So thank you for having me, and thank you for letting me be part of these monthly calls. I look forward to them. I think what I'm going to share with you this evening is going to be just huge for you. I hope it will be. I just came off, literally, just came in last night from Australia and New Zealand, and I spent longer than I really wanted. I spent 16 days on a cruise ship and, saw Australia. I've been there many, many times. I've only been to New Zealand one other time before now. But I had a lot of time, and I got a lot of good writing time. And so for me to talk to you today, what I'm going to share with you now, Becky, and for all of your people, is a lesson I just developed it. And I'm just so excited because in the process of developing this, it goes back to I learn something and I write something, and then I share it with the people that I really want to help. And so you're the first to hear this. No one has ever heard this lesson. And I just want you to know that that when I was working on it last week in southern New Zealand down by the fjords, way down south, gets a little cold down there, I worked on this lesson. I thought about you, and I thought I'm going to share this lesson with you. So I hope you enjoy it. It's called The Bookends of Success. And because I know you take amazing notes, I call this principle a lot of times the 10-80-10 principle. And I have worked what I'm going to teach now. I have worked this principle for 30 years in working with my team. This is a principle I use for team working. And this is going to be, I think, helpful to every person who has to work with the team, which is all of you. And the 10-80-10 principle really has its roots in the 80-20 principle, the Pareto principle, which you know what that's all about. Pareto basically said if you put your priorities right and you do just the two things out of 10, the top 20%, you'll get an 80% return of everything you need. And out of Pareto, I really learned the principle that 20% of your time will give you 80% of your return. And so I became passionate, very much of a passionate, and said, okay, then I have to maximize my time, what I do with my time. I got to maximize the people I spend time with. And I've taken the test, and Becky, I'm sure you have too, and maybe your people have said, listen to read the Strength Finders book. But one of my five strengths is maximizer, okay? Works well with Maxwell, doesn't it? Maxwell, the maximizer, I guess. But anyway, I really know how to maximize time. I know how to maximize people time. And so the 10-80-10 is the way I distribute my time on projects and with people. So it's really the 80-20 principle, but it's 10% is you're going to learn in the moment on the front end, 80% in the middle, and 10% on the end. And the bookends of success are starting well and finishing well. Trust me, if you can't start well, you don't need to worry about finishing. Anyone that never started never finished. But I can tell you that finishing well is about 75% determined on starting well. And you know, we hear the expression all the time, all's well that ends well. I can tell you all's well that begins well. And I found that this to be very true in my life. John Wooden, who was a mentor of mine, always asked the question, every day he said, John, I ask myself this question, how can I make my team better? And I think the way you make your team better is the bookends of success. Learn how to start well with them. Learn how to finish well with them. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to take this 10-80-10, the bookends of success teaching now, and I'm going to break it down for you. So the first point is all is well that begins well, okay? And I'm talking about your first 10%. The first 10% of a project, the first 10% of the time that you spend with a new person. You've got a new recruit in the business. That first 10% is so essential as far as the success with that person. And what I do is I tell people all the time, give 100% to the first 10%. In other words, be all in mentally, be all in physically, be all in emotionally. Dive in the beginning with a person. Give 100% to the first 10%. So the question is, okay, then if it was all's well that begins well, and that's one of the two bookends to success, then how do I begin well? And Becky, what I did on the cruise, I've never done this before. I've been doing this project. I've been doing 1080-10 for many, many years. All of my inner circle could give you examples of 1080-10 that I do with them. But I never sat down and said, okay, tangibly write it out for people so that they can really understand what to do. And so I'm going to do that now. And there are five essentials. And some of these, because of time, because we're limited to our time here, I'm just going to give you. I'm not even going to be able to comment much on them. But I would rather kind of give you an overview of the lesson and not go in depth on some of them. But the first essential of starting a project well is vision. And that's so simple that I don't think I need to spend a lot of time on that. I think, Becky, you've taught your people very, very well about vision. And it's nothing more than just a leader's capacity to take vision and translate it into reality. And that's this on this first 10%. That's what the leader does. He takes the vision, but he says this vision that we have has to be translated into reality. I've always said that vision is the head of the project and mission's the heart of the project. And values are the soul of the project. And on this, I want to make sure that I get all of these things in. I want to just help people understand what vision is and what this vision will do for them. And what I've always done that has been extremely helpful is I've tried to help people understand the beginning that if they're, especially if they're going for significance, if they're going to make a difference, they're not going for a job, they're going for a calling. And there's such a difference between a career and a calling. A career, I mean, if I'm in a career, it's kind of what can I do to advance myself and how can I, quote, get ahead? And if the career doesn't go well, Becky, you've seen this happen many times in your business where you got a whole bunch of people, they come in excited, but they fizzle out. Well, it's because they had a career, they had a job, they didn't have a calling. You don't quit on a calling. A calling calls you. I mean, it's like a mission. It's who you are. You can't even separate yourself. But at the beginning, I really want to make sure that they understand the big picture. That's it, just the big picture. That's the first of five essentials on the first 10% of the project, beginning well. The second is direction. And a lot of people miss it here. They think that casting a broad vision is sufficient. When what they have to realize is once people see the big picture, they have to see the first step, the second step, the third step. I always tell people, if you're really trying to cast a vision of tomorrow, you've got to really help them understand today. It's today that helps everybody. I mean, all of us have seen the mountain, but if we don't know the first step, if we don't know step one, what path to choose. And what I've discovered is that here's what I want you to understand about vision and direction. Direction gives focus to vision. And a lot of people, they have the big picture, but they don't have the clear picture. And so because they don't have the clear picture, they're not going to go where they need to go. They're not going to do what they need to do. And here's what I determined a long time ago. It's direction that turns the switch on to help people really begin to, it's kind of like turning the lights on. All of a sudden they say, oh, I got it. I know what I can do now. And the whole issue of direction is saying, here's our first step. This is what we do. And Thomas Edison, the one that I know said it first. I've read it from other sources, but he said, the greatest brainstorming, the greatest idea session you've ever had with people, he said, understand the only value of an idea lies in the fact that you use it. If you don't use it, you're just in the clouds with somebody. And so ideas, Becky, that's what I explained. Ideas are like the stars. the ideals that we set, the vision we set, we really never reach them. But like good sailors of the sea, they chart our course for us. And what I'm going to do in that first 10% is I'm going to give them the big picture. That's tomorrow. And then I'm going to give them the clear picture. That's today. The big picture is vision. The clear picture is direction. The third thing I do in that first 10%, after I cast the vision and they give the direction, is I get creative with them. I sit down with them and say, okay, now that we have a good idea, let's make it a great idea. Now that we have a good project, let's make it a great project. And now I'm going to really work on the creative side of people. And here's I've always used a set of two questions to know when I've turned the corner creatively with people. I think the first response, whenever we're faced with something that's daunting or big or formidable, I think our first response, all of us, mine, yours, Becky, all of our, I think our first response is, can I do this? I mean, look, this is big. This is a great vision. Hey, can I do this? Is this gonna work for me? Can I? And I know that I've turned the corner with people when I turn that question from can I, which is filled with question, doubts, when I help them turn the corner from can I to how can I. Now that's a huge change. That's the corner of creativity, going from can I, which can I, if we're insecure, we look for excuses. If we're not secure, the can I stage of our life becomes, well, let me give you seven reasons why I can't. And all insecure people thrive towards the reasons why they have it good and shouldn't, didn't, won't. Excuses. And when I take especially a can I person and I turn them into a how can I, because the moment I start Becky saying how can I, you understand. I've already omitted excuses from the line. Now, how am I going to accomplish this? It's not an issue. Am I going to accomplish it? I am. The question is, how can I accomplish this? I was in Melbourne the other day. Becky will love this. And the Australian Open was on. In fact, we were taking a Melbourne tour, and my guide said, you know, the Australian Open's on, semifinals tonight, and Roger Federer's going to play Andy Murray. And so it was a little private tour. And so I told her, I said, well, I want you to stop. I said, I want to go watch that match tonight. And she looked at me and said, well, I'm sorry, do you have tickets? I said, no, I don't have tickets. Well, she said they've been sold out for months. Said, this is a sold-out event. This is probably the number one event in Australia. And there are no tickets for sale. Oh, I said, sure there are. You know, I really do want to go. And she said, well, you really are, you know, I don't want you to be disappointed. And she said, do you want us to wait for you? I said, no, wait for him. Just drop me off here. I'll be good. I know how to find the ship. I'm a big boy. Well, you know, I go to the box office and I'd like to have a ticket for the night. Well, we're sold out. I said, that's fine. I said, now, I know you're sold out. That's good. I'm good for you. Now, not everybody's going to use their ticket. I know that too. So how do I get the ticket of the person who bought the ticket but isn't going to use the ticket because they have something else? And they looked at me and they didn't know what to do with it. I said, well, we don't handle that here. I said, well, who would handle that? Well, we don't. Well, but if you pay $30, you can get in the grounds. Well, I gave $30 and I got on the grounds. Then I went to the box office and I said, how can I get the ticket from somebody that's bought a ticket, but they're not going to show up for the match tonight, and I'd like to pay them for the ticket? And he said, well, that doesn't happen very often. But I said, it does happen. Well, once in a while it happens. I said, well, good, that's the ticket I'm looking for. I'm looking for the one that doesn't happen. I'm not looking for the person that's going. The one who's already in their seat, you know, they got the ticket. Hello, I'm looking for the person that's not going to see. Well, he said, do you see that line out there? He said, there are about 100 people there. I said, I see that line. He said, there'll be five of them probably get a ticket tonight. That's how many will probably be turned in, and the other 95 people are going to be disappointed. So I said, okay, then probably I need to get over there and get in that line. Is that right? He said, well, no, really, you don't want to get in the line because you'd be 101, and 101's not going to get a ticket. I said, good thought. I don't want to get in that line. So I walked around looking for just if somebody wanted to sell a ticket, and I was quickly told that we're not going to be any scalpers, and I wasn't going to be able to get a ticket that way. So I went over to the guy first in line, introduced myself, got a conversation going with him, told him I'd like to go too, and would he kind of help me with the ticket? And well, to make a long story short, because I got to teach a lesson, not tell a story. 30 minutes later, I'm sitting in the lower section, watching the Australian Open with a ticket that everybody told me I couldn't get. Now here's the you see, the people that were telling me I couldn't get the ticket, they were Canada people. Well, can I get in? Well, I don't think I can. It's sold out. And by the way, it's the best ticket in town. Can I? You'll turn around at the gate and you'll go back home. And here's what my answer is to the can I people. My answer to the can I people is no, you can't. So go home. Don't waste your time. Go sit on your butt. It isn't going to happen. The can I doesn't accomplish what you need to accomplish. In my book on questions, Becky, that's coming out, it doesn't come out until next October, but it's just a book. I fell in love with it, writing it. And the title is Good Leaders Ask Great Questions. And one of the things I talk about is the fact that people talk about open doors. Becky, everybody has some open doors. There's not a person that have an open door to them. So let's start there. Everybody gets an open door. But you say, how come some people just get a lot of open doors? And a lot of people, here's very simple. The open doors that are already open, Becky, they're not worth much. Anybody can walk through those doors. And everybody does. But when they get through the first door that's unlocked, that's open, it's kind of like going to the supermarket. It's an automatic kind of deal. You step on the mat, the door even opens for you. You say, boy, life's good, isn't it? You know, when you get inside the first open door, you know what you find? The second door. You know, the first open door only leads you to another door, and here's the issue. The second door is not open. It's closed. You've got to turn the handle on the second door. You're not going to get in by it. The door doesn't open. It's not the supermarket now. You don't just step on a mat and it opens for you. You have to go over and turn it, but it'll open if you turn it. And guess what? When you go to the second door and you turn the handle and you get through that one, guess what you get to now? Another door. See, people think the first open door is always the eureka moment. So, wow, I just joined the company. I'm going to be a millionaire. Wow, this is going to be great. No, the first door, it's automatic. Everybody gets in. All the fools rush in. Second door has a handle on it. You got to turn it. Becky, the third door is locked. It's locked. Now you got to find the key to unlock that door. Now, here's what I'm saying. How can I, people, every day go and unlock doors? They don't expect it to be easy. They don't expect it to be automatic. They don't expect it to be quick. They don't expect it to be fast. But they know there's a key that unlocks that door. So they go through the whole ring. And the first key didn't work. The second key didn't work. The third key didn't work. They don't get discouraged. They just keep going. They just know there's a key. And as soon as they find the key. Well, this is where I really work on this, the 10% backing. This is where I really work on creativity. And basically, I just tell them, creativity is nothing more than the willingness to stand at a locked door and keep working keys till you find the one that works. It's not going to happen quick. It ain't going to happen fast. It ain't going to happen automatic. So on that front 10%, after I give them the vision, the big picture, I give them the direction, the clear picture. Now I give them the creative picture. And the creative picture is the one that they would love to see happen. If you could be anything you wanted to be, if you could do anything you wanted to do, what would you be? What would you do? That's the creative side. And I help them begin to unlock doors. The fourth essential to that top front 10% is empowerment. And empowerment is nothing more than me looking at the people and say, now, I've given you the vision. I've given you the direction. I've given you all these incredible, positive, potential options. Now, I'm going to empower you to go do this. I'm not going to do it for you. I'm not your daddy. I'm not your Santa Claus. I'm your friend. I'm your mentor. I'm your coach. But you're going to have to go do this. Because can I tell you something? No one is going to get self-respect if I do it for them. And so I empower them, and there's only one rule that I have with empowerment. People, when I say, what's the rule for empowerment? I say, oh, believe in people. That's good. But I know people who believe in others, they don't empower anyone. The only rule of empowerment is responsibility. I look at them and I say, very simple. I'm going to believe in you. I'm going to give you opportunity. I'm going to mentor you. I'm going to give you everything I've got. Can I tell you something? There's one thing I can't give you. I can't give you responsibility, so I'm going to empower you to make that your responsibility. It's not mine. It's yours. You have to, with empowerment, the freedom to act, take responsibility, the choice to act. And the freedom to act makes you a bird that can fly with no destination. It's that responsibility to be focused. And so I say, okay, I'll empower you, but you're the one that has to be responsible for yourself. An expression I use sometimes is this one. I look at people and say, at the end of the day, you need to sign your name. Just need to sign your name. When you're done at the end of the day, put your name on it. Are you willing to sign your name and say, this is the day I take responsibility for it? This is the day that I look at and I will take all the good stuff that came, but I'll also take all the responsibility for all the bad stuff that came too. And I think too many times with empowerment, people get so excited about, like, I need to be empowered. If you just release me and empower me, I could do great things. I tell people, no, not until you take responsibility will empowerment ever work for you. The fifth, the last essential in that first 10%. So what do? I cast the vision, big picture, give them direction, clear picture. And I turn around and I say, okay, now that I've given you those two things, I've helped you in that area, and you've got the clear picture, you got the big picture, the process. Now, let's go creative. Let's get the picture of what you would really like to be. But when I do empowerment, it's like at the end of painting the picture, you got to sign your name. Whatever that picture is, put your name to it. The last thing I give them is resources. And I give them resources because I want them to understand that for them to be successful, they have got to have resources within their life. And so therefore, I give them those resources to enable them to be able to accomplish the cause. Napoleon, when he was occupying Moscow, he took the city, but they didn't have enough food resources to stay there. He left the city. He lost it, and he lost that battle. General Patton in World War II, literally, World War II could have been finished quicker if he could have just had the resources of more gasoline. But because he had a shortage of gasoline, it literally took months, and literally thousands of lives were lost because somebody didn't resource them. And again, Becky, what I love here, I love this about you, and here's what I love about your organization, is that you resource all the time. You not only ask your people to work hard and pay the price, focus, be disciplined, and build their business, but you say, I'm going to resource you. In fact, what I'm doing here today is resourcing your people again, and I'm only doing this because of you, Becky. I mean, you're the one that said, John, would you take some time? Would you come alongside of me? Would you partner with me? Would you help make a difference? And you know, hey, yeah, I'll do that. That's resourcing the people, which is absolutely huge. Now, let me give you one quick thought, then I got to get to that middle 80%. I just read a survey of 14,000 people on why they failed to reach their goal. This just blew my mind. I didn't do this lesson with this survey in mind at all. 16% lack of focus. In other words, they just don't stay focused. What is that? That's a vision problem. 36% lack of action. That's a direction problem. 10% fear of failure. That's a creativity problem. 19% lack of confidence and belief in themselves. That's an empowerment issue. 10% lack of tools. That's resources. Isn't it interesting? The five reasons people fail to reach their goal are the five things I give at the very beginning to help people get started well. All is well that begins well. That's my front 10%. Now, obviously, there's a big middle of the project, okay? And it's what I call the 80%. And this is where it takes time. You got to build the business. You got to make the contacts. You got to recruit. whole bunch of stuff has to happen in this 80%. Now, this is where this is very interesting. I give 100% to the first 10%. I only give 20% to the middle 80%. When the project gets running, I pull way back. My time commitment, my energy commitment, my effort, I pull way back. And the reason I pull way back is not because that 80% is not important. It's very, very important. But I have given them the things they need to succeed in that middle 80%. I pull back because now it's time for me to watch to see if they're going to succeed. People all the time say, well, John, let me ask you a question. How do you figure out who you ought to spend time with? This is right here where I figure it out. After I've given 100% to my first 10%, and now they've got to run this project for the next 80%, I mean, okay, now this is going to take months. This may take a couple years. I don't know. It takes a long time. Very long time compared to the front 10%. Now they have to prove themselves. And I want to watch them. I want to observe, because it's out of the 80% that I'm going to pick out who those leaders are for that last 10%. So what do I want to communicate? There are four essentials to help to run this middle part of the project well. Number one is encouragement. And there's people say, why do you encourage? Well, it's very simple. This is the hard part of the project. This is what takes time. This is what is a process. Hey, this is where the person finds out that their dreams have reality. this is where, you know, in the beginning when they thought, oh, this is going to be great, I'm going to be amazing, and then all of a sudden they realize it's not near as great as they thought, they're not near as amazing as they thought. And it just takes time. It's like a guy told me one time, he said, you know, it takes 9 months to have a baby, no matter how many people you put on the job. It doesn't really matter. It takes 9 months. It's a nine-month deal. Well, almost all projects have a period of time, a gestation period of time. It just takes a while. And this part of the project is filled with failure. It's just filled with failure. This is where you lose your people, Becky. You know it is. It's not when you recruit them, they're so excited. They're charging hell with a water pistol, okay? They're all excited. Where do you lose them? Right here. Why? Time, process, failure. They find out it isn't as quick and fast and easy. Okay, Ernest Hemingway said this, so I'm quoting him. So this isn't my own quote, so don't blame me, but I love the quote anyway, okay? So I love the quote, I just don't want to be responsible for it. Okay, here's what Ernest Hemingway said. The first draft of anything is always shit. Don't you just love it? Isn't that just the truth? I love these people who say, well, I really want to do good in this organization, so here I am, Coyote, here I come. Come on. I want to be great. And I want to look up and say, no, you aren't going to be that great. You aren't. Nobody's good at the beginning. You aren't. I'm not. No one is. Well, see, it's in this 80% that encouragement is needed, because there's a lot of failure, a lot of falling. The second thing that's needed in this 80% time are questions, good questions. Because what happens is people get bogged down when they begin to lose their way. And the greatest way to help a person lose the flashlight that you want to turn on when a person begins to lose their way is ask them questions. Ask them questions to help them find their way again. And so in this middle time, this middle 80%, I ask them questions. And basically, here's what I want to tell them. See, I'm going to give it 20% to the 80% in this middle project. So, boy, you say, if you want to give it 20%, you got to be real specific. Well, let me give you an example that's on my questions. I basically say that when you're in this 80% project, there are two questions that I want you to always, there's two questions I'm always wanting to ask you. Just two questions. What are the problems and what is the potential? As you're in this 80%, what are the problems you're having? Because that's the downside. What's the potential? That's the upside. And what I found is this. The problems are usually within the realm of the potential. But people don't associate problems with potential. They associate problems with failure and potential with success. And what they don't realize is almost every problem has a seed of success within it. If you'll tell me your problems, I'll tell you what your potential is. because everything that we enjoy today is because of a problem. I mean, when I'm sick and I take a medicine, do you know why I take that medicine? It works for me because somebody had a problem. And they had a problem, so we got to find a way to cure this. So the medical community got together to cure this. And so I want to know, what are the problems? What's the potential? The third thing I do in this middle 80% is I give advice. And I give advice as a person who comes along and let me just say this. I could teach an hour on advice. This is one of my favorite quotes. Advice is what we ask for when we already know the answer, but we wish we didn't. Most of the advice you give to smart people, they already know what the answer is. What they really need is encouragement. And Dick Cavett said, it's a rare person who wants to hear what he doesn't want to hear. Wow. So I'm looking for those people who want to hear what they don't want to hear. I'm looking for those people who probably already sense what the answer is, but they really didn't wish it. And they need somebody to come along and just lift them up and kind of help them and kind of encourage them. Because I deal a lot of times, because I'm older, and I mentor people that are young. I mentor people that don't have a lot of experience. And let me tell you what advice is. Advice is just experience without the pain of having to go through the lesson yourself. That's all it is. So when I come alongside somebody who has had a lot of experience and I start giving them advice, you know what I'm doing? I'm saying, I'm going to give you the experience in my advice. And if you take it, you don't have to go through the pain of learning it yourself. And there are two kinds of people. Sometimes I'll give them advice and they'll say, I got to learn it myself. So have at it. Hey, and guess what? They're good. They mean well. And a lot of them, they'll go learn it. But, you know, hey, 3 years later, after lumps and pain and limps, they come back and say, boy, you know what you said is true. Yeah, it's true. Can I tell you something? It was true before the pain, as true as it was after the pain. The pain didn't make it true. You just had to go through the pain because you're hard-headed and wouldn't listen. I wouldn't take advice. And I learned a long time ago, that if I was going to ask the advice of successful people, here's a thought, I was going to follow it. But if I wasn't going to take their advice, why would I ask it anyway? I'll just go, hey, go get my lumps. But remember this, when you come through the pain, it's the same lesson. It's just, do you want to have it with pain or without pain? So it's kind of like somebody coming up and they say, I would like to, at the menu today, order success. Okay, well, that's fine. We have success on menu. Now, you can get it two ways. You can either get it with pain or without pain. Which would you like to have? Well, most of us say, oh, give me the pain. I'd really like to have the pain. So, you know, a lot of pain later, we come through it. Oh, my gosh, that was terrible. Wow, I learned so much. Well, you could have learned it all on the front end. It's all there to be learned. It's just how much do you. So advice, when I think of giving that, this is the period that's 80%, I really give advice. The fourth thing I do is give ideas. Because what I find is that when people get stuck in the routine, the process, they're in that 80%, what they really need is just somebody come along and give some fresh thoughts, some fresh ideas. Becky, I can remember where I was on the ship when I wrote these three statements down. Because when I get statements that come to me, not out of thin air, but out of my experience and that what I've learned, and it just there's nothing more exhilarating to me than to write a thought down, and I think, oh wow, I've never not only thought it before, I've never written this thought down, and there's something about writing a thought down that even gives it more power. But here's what I want you to understand. Ideas are birthed during times of interaction. All ideas, great ideas, come when you get around other people that love what you do, dream what you dream, hope what you hope. And so they just start throwing out ideas, and they're birthed there. They're birthed out of interaction with good ideas. By the way, ideas aren't birthed out of interaction with dumb people. Dumb people don't give you any ideas. So you got to understand, being with people doesn't give you ideas. Being with people that have the same passion you have gives you the ideas. So they're birthed out of it during interaction. But they're proven during times of action. You don't prove an idea at the table. You prove an idea by fleshing it out. So they're birthed in interaction, all that creativity, brainstorming, that so much fun when you're sitting around the room and, hey, got the white papers on the wall and you're just throwing stuff on the wall and seeing what sticks. That's where they're birthed. But you don't prove them there. You can't prove them around the table in a boardroom. You got to prove them in action. You got to go out and say, okay, this was the idea we thought was good. Let's see if it's good. And they're improved during times of reflection. Once you go out and act on them, guess what? You find out, A, they work, and B, you find out there are holes in this whole process. In other words, they work, but they don't work as well as they could. So what do? You now come out of action. You go into reflection. And you say, okay, what did I learn? Well, here's what works. Here's what doesn't work. Well, I wonder how I can get this to work. So you improve out of reflection. You improve out of action. You birth it out of interaction. That's the process. And so it's during this action that we're proving these ideas. So I want to throw these out on the 80% and really help them in that process. Okay. Now, all's well that begins well. That's the front 10%. Give 100% of that of my time, energy to that 10%, because I know that if I start them off well, their odds of success begin to greatly increase. Now they're in the 80% of the project. Okay, that's the pregnancy time. That's, you know, you just got to go through the process. I give them 20% of that effort, and it's about 80% though of the time on the project. Now we're getting down to the last 10%. All is well that begins well. Okay, number three, all is well that ends well. I realize again, just as beginning well is essential to the success of the person, ending well is also essential to that success. So just like on the first 10%, what do? I give 100% to the first 10%. Guess what I do on the back 10%? I give 100%. In other words, I'm all in again. I'm all in on the front end. I'm all in on the back end. On the middle, I'm not all in. I'm now watching, observing. In fact, what I say is I'll determine who I spend my time with at the back 10% by how they do, how well they do in the middle 80%. So there are five essentials to finish the project well. Let me just say this before I teach you these five essentials. My greatest contribution of my team is what I'm going to talk about right now. One of the ways that you know that you're a very good leader is if you can do the 10%, the last 10% very well. It is much more common for a leader to be good on the front 10%, what could be, than the back 10%, what could be better. Do you see the difference? The first 10% is what could be. The last 10% is what could be better. You've already handled what could be. You not only took what could be, the middle 80% showed what is. So you went from what could be to what is. Then what happens is most people get satisfied with what is, and they come out and say, hey, we did it, we did it. You know where I help my team the most? Let me have that back 10% with you. What could be better? This is what I talk about at closing something and maximizing something that has great potential. Five essentials. Number one, better ideas, more ideas. When they come out of that 80% run, now we're in the 80%, in that middle 80%, finding of a thing is where you develop it. And that last 10%, it's making something out of what you found. So in that middle 80%, okay, I found this. This is an idea, and it worked. It worked. Okay, now that we know it works, we've already proven it works. How can it work better? It's that last 10% of making something out of what you had. Now, let me say this. There are so many illustrations I give on this. I won't give you one. I 30 years ago, Becky, I started doing monthly CDs. Back then we called them tape clubs. I had, 100,000 people listening to my tapes every month. And the idea came out of I was with a small group of leaders in Jackson, Mississippi, and they basically said, how can you teach us when you're gone? And I got the idea of teaching my staff and recording live, and it became what we call the Maximum Impact Club tapes. Okay, that's a very good idea. That's that 80%, okay? I'm just working it, and people are getting helped. One day in one of our creative meetings, one of the team players said, John, what would happen if we took your best 100 lessons and we put them together in a kit? That's back when you still had cassette tapes and you had kits. And immediately I could tell everybody liked the idea but me. And I thought, that's a dumb idea. My gosh. First of all, who's going to go buy 100 tapes? I mean, it's, you know, it's kind of like we have a 100 tape kit here back for you. So, I mean, it's kind of overwhelming. And then when they realized back then, this was 20 years ago, Becky, that the cost was going to be, you know, $750 for those 100 tapes. I mean, okay, who's going to go pay $750 for 100 tapes? And everybody loved the idea but me. And so I said, okay, I'll tell you what we'll do. We're going to go to a large leadership conference with 500 people. Let's do 300 kits of 100, and let's just see how many we can sell. Well, I went there, and I sold out in 15 minutes and took standing orders. That idea in 6 months was a $1 million idea. Now, that's the last 10%. We were already doing the tapes. Somebody came and said, let me give you a better idea. Let me take what you already have done, and let me take good people, good successful people, they do that 80% well, but they don't take the last 10% and really do it. They don't take that last 10% and take it to a higher level. Does that make sense? And so what do? I want in on the last 10% because I want to take it to a higher level. Here's what I discovered. This is not my thought. I was out in Pebble Beach, and I was going through the John Steinbeck Museum with Margaret Glenda, my assistant. And this is one of the quotes in that museum. He said, ideas are like rabbits. You get a couple, learn how to handle them, and pretty soon you have a dozen. That's a fact. And that's what's good about ideas. Well, on the back end, after you've worked them, now you can just make cream out of them. The second thing you want to do on the back end is not only give more ideas, better ideas, but opportunities. Now, I understand. We hear a lot of people say, well, I think that I lost a business opportunity. And whenever somebody tells me they lost a business opportunity, I want to tell them, no, you didn't lose it. Somebody else found it. Let me tell you something. Hey, somebody else took it, and they're doing really well off that idea. You just fumbled the ball. That's all. And when you fumble your idea, it's not lost if it's a good idea. The only ideas that are lost are bad ideas. If it's a good idea, somebody's already recovered it, picked it up, and they're running on the ball with it. And what are opportunities a result of? Opportunities are a result of questions. What do questions do? They unearth opportunities. Opportunities are a result of networking. You know what networking is? Networking is the vein to lead to other opportunities. When I was in New Zealand, Australia, they talked about the 1850s and 1860s. Gold mining and how they found gold. And one of the things you do is when you find a little bit of gold, you look for a vein that can lead you to more gold. Well, that's what networking is. So when people talk about opportunities, questions unearth opportunities. Networking is the vein that helps you find opportunities. And then openness, just be open. Openness. You know what? Openness is the invitation for more opportunity. Just like closeness. If you're closed, you basically say, you know, we're not open for new opportunities. We have a closed mind. We're not accepting or excited about something that could be different or better. And action creates opportunities. What happens is once we take action on something, we get more opportunities. It goes back to remember when I used the open door? The first door everybody walks through, or 90% of people walk through, that's that supermarket open door. It just opens automatically. In fact, you kind of walk through it whether you knew you did or not. Second door, it's closed. You got to turn the handle. Third door, you got to unlock the key. What happens is once you start seizing opportunity, in fact, Jonas Salk one time said, the greatest reward for seizing an opportunity is that you get another opportunity. Wow, I love that. You see, the door to your next opportunity is the opportunity you have right now. And if you seize that opportunity and take action on it, then it's amazing what happens. Success draws opportunities to you. It's problems that force you to be creative in opportunities. It's the inner circle that helps you know the context of everything, of the opportunity. It's the outer circle that gives you the fresh eyes to see the opportunities. So what you got to understand is what I do on this last 10%, I ask questions. I say, how can we network it? Are we going to be open to new stuff? Let's take some action. Let's, hey, the success is going to draw more opportunities to us. If there are problems, it forces us to be creative. Okay. That last 10%, I want you to know, I'm looking for opportunities. That's actually essential to success. Then, number three is influence. The third thing I want to do at the back 10% is I want to give them what I call my voice. I was talking about giving your team your voice recently, and I had a person say, well, I don't understand what that is. And what it really is you give the team your influence. And I'm at a wonderful time in my life, a wonderful time where I have a strong voice and I can give a lot of influence. And yet I look at my own life and I think in my early years, all the people that gave voices to me, oh my goodness. It was Les Parrott who said, John, I think that you can write a book and I'll go see Bud Lund, who's the publisher in Kansas City, and see if he'll publish the book for you. And it was Les's voice that got me Bud Lund to be my publisher. It was Pete Wagner and Carl George at the Charles Fuller Institute that came to me and said, John, you're building a great church in San Diego, and the other pastors need to know about how you're building this church. And we have the finances of the Charles Fuller Institute to put on conferences across America. Would you go and speak at these conferences about how you're growing this church? They lent me their voice. It was Ron Land at Thomas Nelson who one day said, John, your books are too good just for the Christian community, and I've got a lot of influence with a lot of secular groups and organizations and companies and publishers and publishing organizations. And he said, let me lend you your voice there. And he gave me his voice. And he put me on the secular side of communication. It was Bill Bright who loaned me his voice and said, hey, John, let me tell you something. What you're doing at Equip is amazing. Let me give you an audience, literally, of hundreds of thousands of people around the world. And Bill Bright said, let me begin the Great Commission with you. You can end it with Equip on the back end. He gave me his voice. So it's at this back 10%. Becky, this is what you do with your people all the time. You give them your voice. But let me see. We're okay, gang. Listen to me carefully. You've been taking notes for 52 minutes. Listen to me carefully. Where do I give them my voice? On the back end. In other words, you have to earn that influence. You have to earn that voice. You don't get the voice because you have a passion to have the voice, or you have a desire to have somebody speak for you or influence you. You get it on the back end. There has to be an earning, a proving time for that voice. But on that last 10%, once we've come through the 80%, they've got my voice, they've got my influence, they've got my backing, they've got my support. Number four at the back end on that 10%, I give him recognition. Now I'm going to point to the team. You see, I learned a long time ago to build a better team, give recognition to the team. And to get more ideas, give credit to the team. And so this is where John Wooden, the great basketball coach that mentored me for so many years, he said, if a player throws you a good pass and then you score a bucket, in other words, that pass enabled you probably to make that shot. On the way back down the basketball court, just point to that man who gave you the pass. Recognize him. Say, hey, you're the guy that got the ball to me. If you wouldn't have gotten the ball to me, I couldn't have made the shot. And one of the players, when he began this, he said, but coach, what happens if that other player's not watching it? Coach Wooden said, that player will always be watching. Of course they will be. Every one of us wants to be recognized as not the answer, but a part of the answer. We like somebody to point to us and say, hey, you're the man. You're the woman. You're the person. So in that back 10%, I want to make sure that I give not only voice and influence, but I want to make sure I give credit and recognition to my team. And then the last one, the last essential on that last 10%, when I was working on the ship again, I didn't know what to call this. I kind of started laughing. So, Becky, the best phrase I can come up with, again, this is new. That's what happens when you get a new lecture. You don't get the best. You just get fresh, okay? Is the last thing that's on the last thing I do is I give them the Maxwell touch. And how do I describe the Maxwell touch? Okay, the Maxwell touch is the bow on the present, the ribbon. The Maxwell touch is the cherry on the top of the sundae. And that's the Maxwell touch. Now let me forget me for a moment. Let's go back to Becky. Let's go back to you. It needs the Becky touch, okay? And let me tell you, that last touch, it's got to be yours. And let me tell you, somebody says, well, how do I know if I gave it a good touch? It's very simple. You made it better and you made it special. Hey, if you touched it, it didn't get any better, it was a bad touch. If you touched it and you didn't make it special, it was not a good touch, okay? So how do you make everything better? How do you make everything better? How do you make everything special? Okay, that's the question. Well, the answer is very simple. You look around and you ask yourself always, what needs the Maxwell touch? And I have come to the conclusion, I give this to you, and I'm going to wrap this up, Becky. I've loved being with you again today. You have such a wonderful group. There are five areas that need the Maxwell touch. Number one is people. They're the most appreciable asset I have on my team. So they need my touch. My team, they need the Maxwell touch. It goes back to the John Wooden question, how can I make my team better? This is how you make it better, that last 10%. Partnerships. Partnerships need the Maxwell touch. That's what I have with you, Becky. That's what I have with your organization. A partnership. A touch. You need the bow on the present, cherry on the ice cream sundae. Partnerships need that. In fact, I'm in Atlanta right now, and this week, one of the things the John Maxwell Company is doing is we're bringing in partners that we do a lot of corporate trading and develop people, and we're bringing in our partners this week. And guess what I'm going to do? We're getting Maxwell touch. I'm going to love on them and thank them and show gratitude for them and show value to them. I'm going to be tying ribbons and putting cherries on top all week this week. That's what I'm going to be doing. The fourth area that needs some Maxwell touch is influence. How can I take people of influence and give them more? And the fifth area is ideas. How can I take a good idea and make it better? I am not a brilliant person when it comes about taking nothing and making something out of it. I'm always amazed that people can do that because I think they're probably the true geniuses and I'm not. But I'll tell you what I'm really good at. I'm good at taking something that started and making it a lot better. I'm really good at taking something that good and making it great. So what am I doing? I'm going to do my very best to take ideas and give them that Maxwell touch. One of my favorite quotes on creativity is this. Creativity is to see what everybody else sees and to think what nobody else has thought. I major in that. I see what everybody else sees. The question is not, do you see what everybody else in the room sees? The question is, do you think something that no one else saw? That's what sets you apart. That's the cherry on the top. And I found this to be true, too, from my good friend Jim Rohn, who passed away a couple years ago. If you wish to find, you must search. Here we are. Rarely does a good idea interrupt you. It doesn't interrupt you. People said, well, I'm just waiting for a good idea to pop in my head. Can I do something? They're going to wait all their life. You don't wait for a good idea to interrupt you. You become a person of action and start opening up the doors you have. you got to find, seek out, and look for, and dig for that gold in our hills, that idea that's so good and so helpful. So there you have it. It's called 10-80-10, the book ends to success. 100% on the 10% on the front, 100% on the 10% on the back, 20% on the 80% in the middle. Becky, I've been doing this for 30 years, and this is the first time I really ever taught somebody how to do it. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I sure enjoyed teaching you tonight.
Wow, John, I don't even know what to say. My hand is cramping from all the notes. I love it.
Well, it was a lot of fun. I loved it too. I hope it was good for you, Becky, of course, for Kayani. I just love and appreciate what you guys have done, and looking forward so much to, you know, being with you in Los Angeles real soon. So thanks for the opportunity. I hope I served well today.
Thank you, John. I can't thank you enough. I'm forever indebted, I mean, with the knowledge, the experience, and the willingness to share. And for our team and all of our leaders on the phone, and leaders, when I talk about that, it doesn't matter how long you've been involved in Kayani or your level of success. It's really how you see yourself. And, you know, we always tell people that you are a red diamond when you start believing it. And the only difference between seeing it on a trophy and seeing it in your mind is a matter of applying that action. And it's just waiting for the computer system to catch up to your vision and your growth and the momentum that you've created. And I can't think of a better way to become that how can I person than joining us on March 15th in Los Angeles at the Marriott in Manhattan Beach with Mr. John C. Maxwell. I remember the moment when I planted my flag in this industry and I decided that failure was no longer an option and that I was no longer going to play with the opportunity of a lifetime. I was going to, you know, create that $1 million opportunity because of how serious I was willing to take it. And it came in the form of an incredible man who sat on a stage in front of 16,000 people. And that man was John Maxwell, and he was under the weather and not feeling well, and was even having a hard time speaking because his throat hurt so bad and he was battling a cold. And he sat on that stage on a stool with a cup of hot tea and battled through his own physical struggles to be able to share that enlightenment. And it was a moment for me in my life to hear those words and to learn how to get out of my own way, and such a huge example of sacrifice and willingness and generosity on his part. And I don't know if John will ever understand the kind of impact he had on my life. And that's a huge reason why this training is so important to me, to be able to share with everybody else, to be able to create that moment where the doubt is it's just a fluttering moment, and you won't even remember the doubt because the drive, the passion, the excitement, the determination outweighs all of those things. And for all of us, it is about becoming that how can I person. So I encourage everyone, before I get too emotional, to take action and have a little faith and trust in yourself and the leaders around you. And I promise you, if you don't have that faith yet, you can borrow mine. Because I've yet to find someone who has the drive, who has the willingness, who has the passion, has the work ethic, not have the success. Because we can teach the rest. So you have the support system. It's just a matter of being willing to show up. So it's time to start unlocking doors. And it's not, can I get to Los Angeles? It's how can I get to Los Angeles, you guys. So go to www.greatestversionofyou.com. Click on the store. Register yourself. And take that first step to becoming the how can I person. So, John, thank you again, you guys. God bless everybody.
Thank you.
Have a beautiful week.
Yeah.
Thank you, John.
Yeah,
and we'll talk to everybody soon. So take care.